Hello, and welcome to this week's edition of Maplewood Barn Radio Theater, brought to you in conjunction with KBIA. In keeping with our tradition of bringing you classic stories in an audio format, tonight's presentation is based on a wonderful short story by Meredith Nicholson, entitled The Madness of May. It's a story of mystery and comedy and general larking about, a story of how spring can bring out a little bit of crazy in all of us. Now, we hope you enjoy Maplewood Barn Radio's presentation of The Madness of May. Our story opens with Billy Deering, our protagonist, arriving home.
When I let myself into my father's house near Radford Hills, our servant, Briggs, announced,
"Mr. Hood has arrived, sir. I put him in the south guest room."
"Hood? What Hood?"
"Mr. Hood is all I know, sir. He said he was expected. You had invited him for the night. If there's a mistake..."
"Oh, never mind, Briggs. It's all right. I had simply forgotten I had a guest coming, that's all."
"Very good, sir."
All the way from the train, I'd feared this might happen. The only explanation for a mysterious stranger in our house was the discovery that I had stolen $2 million in gilt-edged bonds from my father's bank, Deering, Gaylord & Company. The long arm of the law was reaching out for me more quickly than I had anticipated. When I reached my own room, I softly opened the door, and there, sitting in a comfortable chair, with his feet on a mahogany table, reading a newspaper, was a man I had never seen before.
"Ah, Deering, very glad you've come. Really, a day like this would put soul into a gargoyle."
"Yes, well, that's all fine and good, but who..."
"My name is Hood, R. Hood. The lone initial might suggest Robert or Rodrigo, but if you recall the stories of your childhood, you may remember a gentleman named Robin Hood of Sherwood Forest. I adopted the name out of admiration for one of the greatest figures in all literature. By the expression on your face, I see that you don't understand, and I can't blame you. Briefly, I'm a hobo with a weakness for good society and yet a friend of the underdog. I confess that I have a passion for grand opera and lobster in any form. Do you grasp the idea?"
"No, I do not grasp it. For God's sake, who are you and what do you want?"
"What time do we dine? 7:30, I think your servant told me."
"Please, just tell me the reason..."
"My dear boy, cheer up. I am here to help. I sensed that you were in trouble and needed a strong arm to sustain you. My motive is purely selfish, finding enjoyment for myself while incidentally helping you. And that, you have to admit, is a fair deal in this world of greed and selfishness. Do you remember the last time you had a good, hearty laugh? I bet you don't."
"What does laughing have to do with
this?" "The world's roaring along at such a rate that we can't find happiness anywhere but in the dictionary. I have traveled this nation from California to Florida and from Duluth to El Paso. I don't mean to brag, but I don't believe there's a first-rate criminal in the country that I don't know. And in the underworld, they look on me, if I may say so, as an old friend. Don't get nervous. I never stole anything in my life. Here, see this wad?"
"Good heavens! That much money would choke a mule."
"Ah, but don't jump to conclusions. Money is poison to me. I hate the smell of it. Don't have a cent of my own in the world. This belongs to my chauffeur. I carry it merely as a precaution."
"Your chauffeur?"
"Oh, yes, Cassowary. His real name doesn't matter. His father made a bundle cutting the forest primeval into lumber and left it to Cassowary. Matter of a million or two. Cassowary had been driven to drink by an unhappy love affair when I plucked him up. Nice fellow, but too self-indulgent. Never had any discipline. He's pretty well saddle-broken in now, and we travel the long trail together. He's still mooning over that girl. It's tough that he can't have the only thing in the world he wants. Some obstreperous parent with shotgun in hand prohibited it. I don't allow Cassowary to carry any money. I would rather risk contamination myself than expose him to it."
"This is all very interesting, but will you pardon me for asking just why you came here? You admit you consort with criminals, and the money you flashed may have been stolen, for all I know. If you have any business
my
with me..."
"My dear fellow, I don't blame you for growing restless. Of course, I know that your father and sister are away, and that you are alone. Your family history I am pretty familiar with. Your mother, who died 4 years ago, was of the Rhode Island Ranger family, and there is no better blood in America. Your sister Constance won the Westchester Golf Championship last year. I learned that from the papers, which I read with a passion. You dined Monday night at the Hotel Pendragon, at a table in the corner on the Fifth Avenue side, and your dejection touched me deeply. Afterward, you went down to the local booze palace and sat there all alone drinking stuff you didn't need. It roused my apprehensions. I feared things were going badly with you, and I thought I'd give you a chance to unburden your soul to me. Hood, the enchanted hobo!
So you've been spying on me, of all the shiftless...
Please don't! With the tinkle of a bell, you can call your man and have me bounced. I have not unpacked my bag, and we can part immediately. But let's be sensible, Deering. Just between ourselves, don't you really need me?
Well, you are obviously not a detective who has come to arrest me. It's possible that you could help me.
So, after going through all the trouble of stealing 2 million worth of negotiable securities, you lost them?
Yes, that's about the size of it.
Let us go over the points again. You set down your suitcase containing 2 million in bonds in Grand Central Station, turned around to buy a ticket to Boston, and when you picked up the bag, it was the wrong one. Such instances are not rare. I've known a few professional suitcase lifters. One of the smoothest is Sammy Tibbetts, but he's doing time in Joliet, so we may as well eliminate Sammy.
No. It was a girl who did it. She was at the local ticket window just behind me. You see, after I bought my ticket, I dropped it, and while I was picking it up, that girl grabbed my suitcase and beat it for the gate.
Enter the girl. 'Twas ever thus. Of course, you telegraphed ahead and stopped her. That was the obvious course.
If I had done that, the whole thing would have leaked out. People don't carry big bunches of bonds around in suitcases. They send them by registered express. Of course, if the girl were honest, she would report the matter to the railroad officials, and they would notify the police, and they'd be looking for the thief. And that's the last thing I want.
Of course. What did the girl look like?
Small, dressed in blue and wearing a white veil. She made a lively sprint for the gate and climbed into the last car just as the train started. The conductor yelled at her not to try it, but the porter jumped out and pushed her up the steps.
Could I examine the suitcase which was substituted for yours at the station?
Yes, of course. It's over here. But there's nothing in it except a filmy nightdress, a case of ivory toilet articles bearing a complicated monogram, a bottle of perfume, half empty, a pair of silk slippers, and a novel, all jumbled together.
The young person left in a haste, then.
Yes, the foolish girl. Why didn't she mind what she was doing and not steal other people's things?
Pardon me, but based on your story, the less you speak of stealing, the better. What I don't understand is why you lifted the bonds in the first place. Your father has a reputation for honesty. You're an only son and slated to succeed him at the bank. Why were you headed for Boston with the loot?
It was to help Ned Ranscombe, an old pal of mine, one of the best fellows on earth. He'd pulled me out of a lot of scrapes. He'd gotten in over his head playing the futures on Mizpah Copper and leaned on me to help him out. And now I can't find him anywhere. I've telephoned all over creation, but he's fallen off the earth. I tell you, everything has gone wrong from the very start. You see, I already had a couple of million in Mizpah, all I could put up personally, and now I've lost the 2 million I stole. Ned's probably got cold feet and drowned himself for all I know. Maybe I should just kill myself.
That should not be necessary. The disappearance of Ranscombe looks suspicious. Either money or a woman, of course.
Ranscombe is all business and never fools with women. And with this big copper deal, he wouldn't waste time on any female.
Human beings are as we find them. But you're too tragic about this whole business. It's comedy, if anything. I'll wager the girl who skipped with your stolen booty has a sense of humor. The keynote to her character is in this novel she grabbed as she hastily packed her bag, The Madness of May. That's one of the funniest books ever written. It kept me chuckling all night. Haven't read it? Well, the heroine excused herself from a dinner that was boring her to death, packed a suitcase, and took off. This time of year, it's natural for human beings to pine for clean air and the open road. It's the wanderlust that's in all of us, old and young alike. It's possible that the young lady who ran off with your bonds felt the spring madness and hit the trail as the girl did in the book. She's probably scared to death. Put yourself in her place, Deering. Imagine her feelings, landing somewhere after a hurried trip, opening her suitcase, and finding that she is a thief.
I don't care about her feelings. In 10 days or less, Father will be back, and what am I going to say to him? How am I going to explain breaking into a safety box and stealing those bonds?
You can't explain it, of course. And it's up to you to find them and put them back. Every hour you spend talking about it is wasted time. We must find that girl.
What chance do we have of that?
The girl wasn't going far, or she wouldn't have been in the local ticket line. She's probably around here somewhere. Now let me think. I know. I'll use one of her slippers. See, I spin it in the air 3 times and... northeast. Okay, that gives us a direction to start. We can stay at the Barton Arms.
That's all you can do? Twirl a slipper and off we go?
It's as good a place to start as any. Northeast is where we're heading. Throw some things into a bag. Something tells me we're going to have a pretty good time. I'll show you untold kingdoms. We will meet people worn with the struggle for things they don't need, out in mild May air, looking for happiness, the only business that's really worthwhile. I'll have Cassowary fetch the car, and we're off to the Barton Arms.
When we arrived at the Barton Arms an hour later, Hood and I ran into two men who were just leaving the inn. Hood greeted them heartily as old acquaintances and talked to them while I went in to ask for rooms. Hood soon rejoined me at the desk.
The suspicions of those fellows always tickle me. They were detectives.
Perhaps. Maybe they're looking for me.
Oh, heavens no. Nothing as intelligent as that. On the contrary, they're looking for me. They just don't know it.
They don't know who you are?
That's right, and they're not likely to find out. There are things that I can't tell even you. I, Hood, the Prince of Tramps, even I must have my secrets. But in time you will know everything. Now there's work for us to do. We will test all the claptrap of the highest-priced novelists.
I don't like this. You promised to help me find those stolen bonds, and now you're talking like a lunatic again.
Don't blather on, or I will grow peevish. At the present moment, I feel like taking a walk under the mythical May stars. The night invites the soul to meditation. The stars may have the answer to all our perplexities. Stop fretting about your bonds and your friend Ranscombe. Let us take counsel from the heavens and try to forget our sins. To the northeast, my dear boy. We are on our way!
So, after putting our bags in our rooms, we set out walking. After a mile or so, I was overcome by weariness and climbed up on a stone wall to catch my breath. Hood clambered up beside me. On a high ridge some distance away, a long, low house was etched against the moon.
A splendid bungalow. The roof makes a pretty line against the stars, and those pines beyond it add a distinct touch.
Wait, what's that? It looks like a ghost dancing in the night.
In a clown suit, it looks like. Come, let's go have a look. It's odd, but in that story I was telling you about, the heroine danced around at night in strange costumes, scaring people to death. I'm not saying this ghost has read that book. I'm merely stating a fact.
We found a path that zigzagged across the meadow, but the ghost must have heard us and darted away into the night.
It looked like a girl, and here's part of her costume. She dropped her clown's cap when she heard us. It looks like we have begun well. A girl masquerading out under the stars, a happy victim of May madness. This is the happiest thing I've seen in years. Well, we might as well be on our way. We frightened the lady, and she will dance no more tonight. However, we have our cap, which points the way for tomorrow's work.
Have you forgotten what we're looking for?
Calm down. Don't you see we're on the verge of a new Midsummer Night's Dream? At least there's one girl left in the world who will dance under stars. How inspiring. Look, I sympathize with your troubles, but try to forget them for now. This will do for tonight. We'd better go back to the Barton and get some sleep.
I was just thinking
that... Thinking is a bad habit, my friend. Thought is the curse of the world. The less thinking we do, the better off we are.
I don't think I'll go back to the Barton just yet. It's possible, you know. The girl might...
You've got it! The spell is taking hold. Wait here 1,000 years if you like, and don't worry about me. Here's her cap. Better keep it for good luck.
I stood with the clown's cap in my hand, staring after Hood's retreating figure. I began to wonder if there might be something to Hood's chatter about May madness. At any rate, I forgot my troubles, and I was conscious of a new sense of freedom. I had been kidnapped by the oddest man I ever met, and I didn't care. As I strode steadily down a zigzagging path, it struck me that the moon had not moved for some time. Treading lightly toward the lunar mystery, soon I stood beneath the form of a moon, cleverly contrived of barrel staves and tissue paper with a lighted lantern inside and thrust into the crotch of a tree.
Please, don't spoil my moon. It took me a while to make it.
I beg your pardon, but I didn't know it was your moon. I thought it was just the regular old moon and it forgot to move.
Oh, don't apologize. I hoped somebody would come along to have a look at it. But you'd better run along now. This is private property, you know.
Thanks for the hint. But I don't scare so easily. I'm an outlaw.
Really? A burglar?
Not professionally, but I'm seriously thinking of going into the business. What do you think of burgling as a career?
It would be interesting. So you're really new at the game?
Well, I've stolen before, if that's what you mean. But I didn't get much fun out of it. I suppose it gets easier.
I imagine that's true.
I've joined Robin Hood's band. At least I've been adopted by a new sort of Robin Hood who's traveling around robbing the rich to give to the poor and otherwise meddling in people's affairs. The old original Robin Hood brought up to date. If it hadn't been for him, I might be cooling my heels in jail right now. He's an expert on jails, been in nearly every slammer in America. He's tucked me under his wing, persuaded me to take to the highway and not care about anything.
How delightful. But that's too good to be true. You're fooling me, aren't you?
As my eyes adjusted to the light, I could see that she was young and beautiful. She was like a fairy from a world of wonder, the happy land of make-believe.
Bill Blake would have liked a night like this, but he would have added lambs to the picture.
Bill Blake? Do you mean Billy Blake, who was halfback on the Harvard football team last year?
No, I was thinking of a poet named Blake who wrote a nice verse. Something like this. I give you the end of this golden string. Only wind it into a ball. It will lead you to heaven's gate, built in Jerusalem's wall.
Gosh, no girl ever quoted poetry to me before. What's the rest of it?
There isn't any rest of it. Don't you see that there couldn't be anything more? It's finished, a perfect little poem all by itself.
I'm afraid I don't get it. I'd rather stay by this wall talking to you than go to Jerusalem.
You'd be foolish to do that if you really had the end of the golden string and could follow it to paradise. I think it means any nice place, any place where happiness is.
I think I understand now. I've never gone in much for poetry.
Oh, then you will have to start. Burglars are natural poets. Burglars have to have imagination, or they wouldn't be able to imagine what they're going to steal.
That makes sense. And if I run into a policeman, I've got to imagine it's an old college friend and give him a hug.
Oh, don't spoil a pretty idea that way. You haven't even told me your name yet. Of course, if you become a burglar, you will have lots of names. But I'd like to know your real one.
Why?
Because you seem nice for a burglar, and I liked the way you went up to the moon and poked your finger into it.
Well, circumstances being what they are, and as a thief, I don't think you should ask my real name. You might be a detective.
I'm not, really.
You could call me Friar Tuck or Little John. I am traveling with Robin Hood, remember?
Mr. Tuck. That will be splendid.
And now that you know my name, it's only fair to tell me yours.
Pierrette.
What a pretty name. And you live in the bungalow, I suppose?
I live wherever I am. That's the fun of playing all the time.
But right now you are living in the bungalow?
Oh, I've been staying there for a few days, that's all. I haven't got a home, not really. Wherever stars shine brightest, there my home shall be. In the murmuring forest or by the sounding sea, with overhead bough and underfoot grass, where only dreams and butterflies dare to pass.
Is that Blake?
It's me, you silly goose. But it's only an imitation. Well, my moon's gone out, so I've got to go in.
Please, before you go, when can I see you again?
Who knows?
But I would really like to see you again.
Oh, that's not necessary for your happiness or mine. I can't associate with burglars, at least not socially.
Burglars? But I'm not a burglar.
Don't say it! If you say you're not, you won't be any fun anymore.
Well, then, we'll say that I am. A terrible thief. A complete reprobate. Now, may I come see you again?
All right. Come to the bungalow for breakfast tomorrow.
And may I bring Hood? He's my boss, you understand, and I can't leave him behind.
Certainly. Bring Mr. Hood. Breakfast at 8.
And your home, your address, is there in the bungalow?
I've told you where my home is, in the verse I made up. And my address is Care of the Little Dipper. There it is, up there in the sky, all nice and silvery.
The Little Dipper seems like a rather remote address. Oh, here's something I found down the hill. Your clown's cap.
Thank you. Now, good night.
I walked back to the inn with elation throbbing in my veins. The May air had changed my whole nature. I was not the William B. Deering who had thought about killing himself a few hours earlier. A new joy had entered me. ¶¶ I woke at 7 and looked in on Hood, who lay sprawled across his bed reading newspapers.
Get cleaned up. We have work to do. We'll have some breakfast and go out and see what the world has to offer.
We are going out for breakfast. The girl up at the bungalow invited me, and I accepted on behalf of both of us.
How pleasant. You are doing well, my boy.
She's a very nice girl, I think.
Breakfast is the one important meal of the day. All great adventures should start at breakfast tables. What is her name?
Pierrette.
Delightful. So you met the dancing girl. I must say...
She had hung our moon in the tree. That's how I found her.
That's always the way. It never fails. But we can't waste much time at the bungalow. We've got a lot to do today.
I'm going to stay as long as she'll let me. You can't expect me to find a girl whose post office address is the Little Dipper and then go off and just forget about her.
That's the right spirit, but we'll see. My business right now is to keep you out of trouble. You can't tell about these moon girls. She may have a wart on her nose when you see her in daylight.
I doubt that.
And she probably has parents, and they might not relish the idea of two strange men prowling around looking for breakfast.
But I tell you, we were invited.
All right. I'll wait for you downstairs. I want to see how old Cassowary's doing. He seemed a little more cheerful last night.
We walked to the bungalow and Hood banged the knocker. A capped and aproned maid opened the door immediately.
We have come for breakfast and have brought our appetites with us.
You are expected. Breakfast will be served immediately.
And the hostess?
The lady of the house wishes me to say that she would be here in spirit. Pressing duties called her elsewhere.
What? But that's why
that,
we...
It will be fine, my boy. Look, they have strawberries.
My spirit sank. Pierrette was only a dream. Hood, though, found the situation satisfactory. He took a mouthful of strawberries and spit little flecks at me as he said,
Don't worry. She's just being shy. She provided the breakfast on time. That's encouraging. And with strawberry prices being what they are, she has been very generous.
I don't care about strawberries.
Did you look at the maid? Even in the plain cap, it was obvious she was pretty. Perhaps she's the adorable one.
No, the other girl had a sweeter voice. It was unmistakable.
There's mystery here, a game of some kind. Note the swish of silken skirts, and I caught a glimpse of silken hose.
Perhaps you're right. Miss? Oh, miss?
Yes, sir?
We do not wish to eat alone. If your mistress is not returning for some time, will you do us the honor to sit down with us?
Thank you, sir. You are most kind.
No, thank you for joining us. This is Mr. Tuck, and I am Mr. Hood, and you are...
My mistress calls me Babette.
Perfect. Actually, we are two outlaws whose names must be withheld to protect the innocent, such as yourself.
My friend is just babbling.
Babette, I'd like to ask you a question. In all sincerity now, do you believe applesauce is the proper side dish for roast duck?
No, I don't think applesauce and venison go together at all.
Admirable. You are clearly an independent thinker. Babette is one of us, one of the great company of the stars. Babette, my sister, I salute you.
And are you, sir, one of the comrades of perpetual youth?
I am, but I'm only a novice, a brother of the second class.
There are no classes in the great comradeship. Either we are or we are not.
Well spoken.
And do you and Pierrette think about the things the same way?
We do, by not thinking. Thinking among the comrades is forbidden, is it not?
Absolutely. Our young brother here is still a little weak in the faith, but he's taking to it splendidly.
I'm new myself.
You're letter perfect in the part. Perhaps you were driven to it?
A man loved me, and I sent him away, and was sorry.
He will come back, if he is worthy of you.
I was unkind to him. I was very hard on him, and I'm afraid that I will never see him again, if there's nothing further.
Not food, if that's what you mean.
But what about Pierrette? If she is coming back, we must wait for her.
I would not advise it. I have no idea when she might be back. Now, if you will excuse me.
Well, what did that accomplish?
Please don't speak to me in that tone. This was your breakfast, not mine. Ah, what have we here behind this curtain?
It appears to be an artist's studio.
Yes, and the paint is still wet on the canvas. And who is the girl in the portrait?
That's her. The Moon Girl. That's the girl I talked to last night.
A sophisticated brush. No amateur's job. Look, proofs. Seems to me I've seen that sort of thing lately. Pantaloon, Harlequin, Columbine, and Clown. Latest fad in magazine covers. Pierrette probably models for the artist. The same girl is repeated over and over again in these drawings. I believe that Pierrette likes to pose and Babette likes to paint.
Wait. What is that in the corner? My bag! My suitcase! It's all right. Everything is here.
Most unfortunate. Now that you've found that rubbish, I suppose our adventure is over?
It was Pierrette who took it. It couldn't have been this artist girl. Here, let me open up one to double-check. What? There's only a sheaf of blank paper in here. Robbed! Tricked!
The wax seal looks authentic.
They're all full of blank paper. It's all gone.
You should be grateful. Yesterday you thought you were a thief. Now you're just a guy with a suitcase full of paper. General rejoicing seems to be in order. Looks like your father robbed himself. It's a spicy situation. Let's look at those envelopes. The Tieringham estate. What do you make of that?
That's an estate father was executor of. It's a long story. Old man Tieringham had been a customer of his and left a will that made it impossible to close the estate until his son had reached a certain age. The final settlement was to be made this summer. But my God, Hood, do you suppose father could be the...
A swindler?
It's impossible. Father is an honorable man.
I'm sure he is. So were you until you pilfered your father's strongbox. Put that stuff away. We must flit. Bring the suitcase with you.
Where are we going?
Do you have the slipper? Oh, yes, here it is. Spin it 3 times and east. Once more, we will follow the pointing slipper. Yesterday, it led us to a moon girl in the suitcase. Now it points toward the mysterious east, and there's no telling what new delights lie in that direction.
Ah, yes. But since we are out of time, don't you just hate that? Those new delights will have to wait until next week. There is still so much to learn. Who stole the bonds? Will Pierrette meet our hero Tuck again? And above all, who is this person Hood who came bursting into Deering's life? Find out the answers to these questions next week when we bring you part 2 of The Madness of May by Meredith Nicholson, as presented by the Maplewood Barn Radio Theater. Our performers in this evening's show were Jeff Martin as Deering, Chris Bowling as Hood, Val Davis as Pierrette, Deb Davis as the maid, and Paul Davis as the butler Briggs. This is your narrator, Byron Scott, hoping you'll join us again next week for the thrilling conclusion of The Madness of May, presented by the Maplewood Barn Radio Players right here on KBIA.